Hi, everyone. Before we begin today, we wanted to share our support for an immediate de-escalation and ceasefire in Gaza and for the U.S. government's official and effortful commitment to that position. We really want to emphasize that we are not experts on this conflict and ourselves have been looking to more knowledgeable and to directly affected people to learn more. And we'll share links and resources that have been helping us to learn more in the show notes today.
We really encourage you to seek out those better resources to get current information and to figure out how you want to take action. We just want to use our small platform to join others calling for justice while recognizing that there are very much limits to what we can offer to you as people who you interact with via this online Percy Jackson podcast.
That being said, if you live in the U.S. and want to communicate your support for a ceasefire, you can call your representatives and ask them to support House Resolution 786. Resources on how to do that are in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, everybody, to Seaweed Brain, a Percy Jackson podcast where a gaggle of 20-somethings like to gather on a quiet evening to overanalyze children's novels. Today, we are joined once more by a wonderful returning special guest here to discuss chapters 11 through 14 of The Chalice of the Gods. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome back, Jake Sweat.
Yo, what is up? What is up?
Jake Sweat is joining us today. America, as always, Carter, hello.
Hi.
We are so happy to have Jake here. Jake, I feel like you're really excited about The Chalice of the Gods.
I am really excited. I feel like it's cool to see him so much older. Like, it's just cool to be in a perspective of an older demigod. So, yes.
Absolutely. And have you finished the book by this point?
I haven't. I'm on chapter 17, so I am past great. What we talk about today, which is great, obviously. But no, I was really hoping to have finished my own, but I got to there. But it's been, oh my god, like, it's like you pick it up and you're like, oh my god, uh-huh. Oh my god, it's great.
I also haven't finished it. I've been savoring it, just kind of reading a little bit at a time, although some of it's been spoiled for me, which is okay.
Yeah, the worst thing is with these books is just like, you just want to savor it so bad, right? Yeah. You're like, I don't want to read it unless I'm like so just like ready to just indulge in it, right? So I feel that.
Wait, Carter, have you finished it yet?
I have not.
Oh, look at us. Fake fans.
We're giving read a long podcast this time.
Yeah, we're giving Mike Schubert energy. Jake, we do have to ask you a question. Jacob Sweat, what is your favorite drinkable beverage that you would drink? What would be in your chalice of the gods? What would your chalice of the gods dispense? What would the chalice of
godly beverage number 5?
Oh. Yeah, what's your godly Olympian beverage number 5?
That's so tough. It's so hard because I feel like everyone has like the beverage that's good for you and then the beverage that's bad for you, and you have like
give us both
one of either. But I will say I love Berry Lemonade Jones Soda. You guys ever have Jones Soda before?
No.
Berry?
Never had it. Jones Soda is really awesome. And berry lemonade is like my favorite flavor. So that's probably like my favorite,
cute.
A pop or like soda. And I would say that. Pop. I would say, yeah, berry lemonade or maybe just like a Slurpee. I love a Slurpee.
Wait, no. What color Slurpee?
What color? See, I've never understood it because I never get one color. I always mix it up. Like, it just
gets
purple,
swamp
dark
slushy.
Purple mess. Yeah. So I can't say one color. Like, I'm not like a cherry. Like, if it's cherry versus blue, I'm going to go blue every time.
Okay. I have to
go blue. Yeah.
Come on. It's no, blue drink. There was a right answer. And it was if it's cherry versus blue.
Go blue. There you go. Yes.
Yeah. And then literally not even for the Michigan affiliation or the Percy Jackson of it all.
Truly. Thing?
Oh my God. Not even because of Heather's. I just think the blue is the better flavor.
Yo, agreed. Agreed.
And to be clear, the flavors are not red and blue. The flavors are cherry and blue.
Blue. Yeah.
It's true. It's like cherry, blue, and cola. It's like those are like the three.
Yes, yeah.
Literally the colors.
I went to like brewery in Boston and they were like, they had a flavor of the brewed ale or something called blue. And people were like, what? What does that mean? And they were like, oh, it's obviously blue Slurpee. Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most popular flavor.
What is the brewed ale? What is that? Is
like, it was like they were doing lots of like beer derivative, like passion fruit or like other, like, you know, like fruity carbonated alcoholic beverages that were like 5% roughly.
Okay.
But the most popular one was blue. And what they meant was blue Slurpee turned into like a beer, basically.
That's
that sounds amazing. Because it would be like a little fizzy, maybe.
Yeah. It was sick. Yeah, no, they achieved the fizzy to icy effect.
Oh,
bridging
yeah.
Perfectly.
Wow.
Perfect. That is perfect.
You're over in East Boston? Check them out, I guess.
What's it called?
They're not paying us.
What's it called?
It's called Downey Cider House. Shout out to them.
All right.
Shout out to them. Should we talk about Percy Jackson now?
Yes.
Let's 100%. Get into it.
Where did we last leave off, Carter?
We last left off having fully subdued Hebe, having secured victory, turning her into a day-old infant, and Annabeth delivering us the iconic line. What was it? Burp for yes?
Burp I remember once for yes, for no. Poop yourself for no.
Definitely poop yourself for no.
Or like gurgle for yes.
Gurgle, yeah, something like, fine. I have the book in front of me. I could literally read it off. This is embarrassing. Wow. Gurgle once for yes, poop yourself for no. Anyway, the point is that Annabeth's plan worked. We have defeated Hebe. We're going to get our information and figure out who is our new lead suspect for having stolen the cup, the chalice of the gods. And that's where we open up. Hebe's giving us the tea, and Hebe's number one suspect is Iris.
We kind of knew this was coming. Based on the chapter titles.
Based on the chapter titles. Based on... Basically, like, Ganymede's original tip was also, like, you might want to check out, like, some of the previous cupbearers for the gods. You want to check out people who are jealous of my life because they used to sort of have it, in a way.
Because they used to labor for the gods.
Right.
Yeah. So, first we checked in with Hebe, and then Hebe's like, well, like, also, Iris is, like, in that same category. Hebe thinks Iris is a little suspicious. This description is, like, honestly interesting, where Hebe is kind of like, Iris is scarier than me, and she's stranger, and, like, people think that she's, like, lovely and kooky and, like, a peaceful vegetarian, but you better watch yourself, and there's something that she's hiding.
What are our thoughts
on the idea of vegetarian conspiracy?
I love it. I love the idea that somebody who's really invested in wellness is secretly hiding something. Like demonic or gory or gruesome about their personality.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I do like that too. Wait, because did they say that Hebe is a vegetarian? I'm forgetting now in the book.
Iris. Iris is a vegetarian. Right. She runs the farmer's market. She sells crystals.
She had that health food store back in what book was it?
That was back in Son of Neptune.
Son of Neptune.
They were on
the
way up the West Coast. West Coast, hello. Where else are they going to run into the vegan, Buddhist, fish jerky? It was, yeah, she was like fully in like Portland or NorCal or something.
I think it was Northern California. Yeah, I think that was where.
Yeah.
When Percy runs into him with, why am I blanking on the rest of the
Hazel and Frank.
Yeah.
The one thing I really remember from that was the satchel. The man purse conversation.
Oh, that was disappointing. My biggest takeaway was like Iris was like kind of Buddhist. And she was like, what? Are you telling me that a Greek goddess can't be Buddhist? That's like really discriminatory. And
Martin
we were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I feel like the way that he kind of, not to like jump ahead here, but like the way that we kind of like get the descriptor of her when you see her again here is like exactly what I was expecting and hoping for. And I like, sometimes it's like been a minute since I've, you know, like kind of read that part in Son of Neptune, you know, and I'm just like, maybe, you know, I have like a different idea in my head. And like, by the time we're going to meet the goddess, I'm going to be like, oh, it's like, she actually is, like you're saying, like more devious than I had like previously imagined. But like the way he describes it, I'm like, no, that is exactly who, like,
yeah,
even more so than like what they're described as like on the surface level, it's like deeper, you know what I'm saying? Because some of the gods have some deeper, like, you know, whether or not they're genuinely like good or bad person, I guess is a way to put it. But in this one, I was like, dang, I feel like I had her in my mind as like one of the gods you can probably count on. And I'm
Yeah, okay.
She still is. Like, it's not, I'm not delusional. Like,
I feel also like she still is someone I can count on. Like, I would be pretty shocked. I haven't read past the chapters we're talking about today.
No, it's okay.
Pretty shocked if she had some great big turn. Was this you who wrote this, Carter, about relating to Percy?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Percy, at the beginning of this chapter, when Hebe reveals that it's Iris, Percy's first reaction is like, oh, thank God, it's local. He's like, okay, we're going to go find Iris in the city on Saturday. That's amazing because I have so much homework to do and I don't want to have to leave and go on a trip because I have so much homework to do. That was so real of him.
Weren't the moments where you're like relating to him now as like an older person just like the best, like some of the best parts of reading it? You're like, yeah.
Yes.
You're still truly experiencing that was a treat. Like, what it's like to grow up just like I am, which is good.
And he's learning, like, the developing of the filter is so cute because Percy's like, I've met Iris. She didn't seem spiteful. And Hebe says, what? And I do. And Percy's narration says, I kept my mouth shut. Sometimes I can learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. He's like, and I could have said something rude there, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. Look at me learning.
Yeah. I do also relate to somebody being like, oh, wait, that other person seems nice. And being like, girl, and?
And I'm not. And I'm not nice. I had to shout out. This is as they were leaving and they're walking out of Hebe Jeebies. Quote, the last we saw Hebe, she was welcoming a group of millennials who wanted to relive the 90s through the magic of Spice Girls karaoke. I hoped they made it out alive. No. And I felt red for filth.
That is nasty. He was, that was rotted nasty. For that. That I, was so mean.
I do Spice Girls karaoke.
Rick Riordan? Rick Riordan is 60 years old. Rick Riordan telling you, oh, by the way, you're elderly? Wow, that was a lot.
No, he's right for that, though. Because literally someone hate DM'd us this week and said, we're millennials. They said in their hate DM to Seaweed Brain Podcast, you guys have millennial energy.
This is wild. Every episode recently, we've had to talk about the millennial Gen Z divide.
Wait, I have to ask, like, because where... Like, where do you sit on it? Like, where do you feel you belong? Like, where do you fit in?
I really feel like we're in the middle.
I feel like we're in the middle. But if you meet somebody who's 27 years old, they will say they're in the middle. And a BuzzFeed quiz will tell them that they are in the middle. And then you're like, well, what does that mean?
You're in the upper middle and we're in the lower middle.
We're the lower middle. Exactly. We're like, I have a younger sister and I know I'm not actually Gen Z. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
She will be like, it's too hard for me to text you a TikTok. You need to link us on the app so I can DM it to you and then give you the additional context without switching screens. And I was like, wow. Generational divide. What? No,
yeah. That's nice. I have a younger sister as well, and it is, I can relate.
My 18-year-old coworker couldn't immediately identify Love on Top as a song by Beyonce.
By Beyonce? That's not a generational divide. I'm sorry. Real Gen Z knows who Beyonce is. Beyonce didn't go somewhere when they were born. That's ridiculous.
True. That's true.
But they don't know this about the Snuggie video, you know?
Oh, they were there for Countdown. Oh. The Filipino Gay Boy version.
Yeah.
I feel like for me, a big difference maker, I was thinking about the save and was like, I was still like did a lot of things outside by the time I was in eighth grade. Like I wasn't really like screen locked at that age. And I think that said a lot.
That's one of the BuzzFeed questions on their little quiz is like, what was your first phone? My first phone was a flip phone. So
yeah. Oh, so you know? Yeah, we're in the
middle. So we are. Well, like, and BuzzFeed, they're saying, like, that's enough to be millennial edge.
Let's be honest, Rick is writing for us. He's writing for that.
Yeah.
It was an appropriate read.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot of people in my life for being millennials recently, but it's, you know, sometimes you gotta get read back.
Right.
I want to get him back. Well, Percy has some reflections.
Oh, no, because this scene is everything.
This is a great scene. This is a god-tier scene. We could spend the entire episode just talking about this scene.
Agreed.
Okay, they're leaving. They all go their separate ways. Percy, like, walks home from, like, Times Square up to the Upper East Side.
Which I just love. I know we kind of already said this about it staying local, like, but I really do love that it is all just, like, right here.
Yeah, it is neighborhood.
Yeah, kind of makes you start to fill out any gaps or something you feel like you've been like, where could I have missed something before that like they could have gone and done in this period of time where you don't see them or something, which I guess you kind of do follow pretty closely in the time period over even when he grows up, you know, in the first series here, but like...
But this is still so new. Yeah. We've never had Percy just be like, I walked home today.
Right, right.
What? Literally!
Just like moments to breathe.
Were you like on Fifth? Where did you go? What did you see? You know?
What other landmarks do we need to mark down so we can go stand and look at it from your point of view and what, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
He walks home and we get this phenomenal, very well realized fire escape scene with Percy and Sally. That, wow. This scene is everything. This scene, when Rick said on tour that I am excited to finally stop and breathe and give you moments to seep in ideas about family and home and leaving childhood, he wasn't joking. He really delivered. Right. We were having multiple moments to pause and sit and think and seep in New York City and have Percy just like look into people's windows and
I love that part.
It's so good. Now you're literally hitting the nail on the head, Carter. Those moments have kind of just become the most that you like look forward to, oddly enough. You're like,
yes.
Damn, I forgot that it started with like that's the thing, is the series is so wide. It's this whole world that's like opened up, and you forget that like you got tied in the first place because you just love the main character, right? Like the main characters had such a perspective, and then now you get to like, he gets to think freely again in some moments here. It's so nice. Yes.
It's like reconnecting with your childhood friend where like you vaguely kind of, you guys used to be really close as kids and then you kind of got separated a bit in middle school, high school. You still knew what he was up to, but now you're like both older and you get to like become close again and be like, oh wow, this is how your brain works now. Like,
yeah.
So much, but at the same time, you're still the same person. Like
how his brain works, I feel like is a great way to say that.
Shall we read the description of Sally?
Yeah, we're going to have to do a reading.
This is page 84. Hey, my mom said. I glanced back to see her climbing through the window. We're on the fire escape. You need a hand? I started to get up. I wasn't sure why I was worried. She climbed out that window 100 times. But tonight I felt concerned. Maybe because my whole future felt fragile. She waved at me to stay seated. I'm fine, she said. It just looked like you could use some company. She sat down next to me, her back against the brick wall. The gray streaks in her hair gleamed like veins of silver. Weirdly, I'd gotten my first shock of gray before my mom did, thanks to a certain titan named Atlas, but hers suited her better. She didn't look older so much as more regal. I remembered that a long time ago, Poseidon had compared my mom to a princess, and he hadn't meant the damsel in distress stereotype. He meant the warrior princesses of ancient Greece who took no prisoners and knew how to swing a bronze blade. My mom had that kind of strength. She also had the kindness to notice I was hurting and to climb out a window to be with me.
Wow.
I could keep reading, but you could also read it yourself for the whole New York window description, which literally makes me want to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to say something about Sally, though, Jake?
I don't know. She doesn't have to. It's like there's not many words exchanged for like the point to get across, you know?
Yes.
And I think you start to just realize that like she definitely doesn't baby Percy, which is really cool. I really respect that a lot. I think it's awesome to see that. Like we're saying here, like you don't really see so much of him and his mom like conversing, or at least in a long time, right? In a long time.
He explicitly mentions that here. He's like, I never tell her about the quests. I don't tell her what I do when I'm outside of home because I don't want her to worry. And this is one of the rare moments where he's like, I'm thinking about aging. I'm thinking about what I've gained and who I was before. And it's shaking me. And she's just like, you're fine. You were fine then. You'll be fine now. And there's such a like quiet... Yeah, there's like a restraint. There's a grace. That's the spirit that she has always embodied. And that's the spirit of the series. That like the right thing to tell somebody who is like doing difficult things, who is in that transitional liminal space, is like, you've had it before, you have it now. Like,
yeah, keep going.
About yourself.
Yeah. Oh,
saying that like when you were little, you would just stare down whatever was scaring you until it went away or until you understood it. Thinking about you as a toddler makes me feel sick to your stomach. She laughed. It makes me feel hopeful. You're still moving forward. You've grown into a fine young man and I'm proud of you. Oh, I could cry.
Right? Right?
That idea, like you're still moving forward. Like you've always been this way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to have this innate sense of I'm going to solve this problem either by fighting it or coming to understand it and like show it compassion, which is what we've seen from Percy. Like that idea of coming to understand it, that just reminded me of Tyson.
Yes.
And his tendency to like want to kind of empathetically get to the root of something or someone in a way that like contrasts Annabeth a lot. And that he's been showing that from a young age is like so sweet.
That is, yeah. You know what? That's true.
And just like, you're still moving forward. I don't know.
Yes. That, you're still moving forward.
That's a Percy Jackson tattoo quotable worthy sentence, I feel like.
Yes, 100%.
Everything about that, yeah, this encapsulates the messages so well of personal change, of restraint.
Yeah.
I seriously just think like reading this whole part was like, never could a book arrive in more of a right time for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like, I didn't know that maybe the sequel did need to be written for, like, so much later. Like, it just hits. And you're like, yes. Like, yeah, it's the kind of thoughts, I think, like, the kind of anxiety that he starts to, like, kind of express more in the book here than previously. Not to say that he hasn't had it before.
Oh, yeah.
Know? Just more, maybe just, like, at the center of what he thinks about than not.
Yeah.
I think is so yeah. relatable to the age that he's at right now.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, he's age appropriate. I feel like I got into this a little bit with somebody recently, but I was like, I think that this conversation is emblematic of it. But the rest of the book is this way too, where like it's, I think some people might find it a little strange getting into this particular book because Percy is much older, but it's still a middle grade book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such, I think that this vein of work is so important. The idea of like not dumbing it down, but being like, this is like a mature 18-year-old telling like probably a 12-year-old, like, this is what I'm thinking about. Like, this is what I'm struggling with right now.
Yes.
In a way that's like appropriate for that age. But it's also like this is not what a 12-year-old is thinking about. Like, Percy is like really wrestling with what it means to like, to leave home, to recontextualize himself, to like take pleasure in doing the dishes. Like, the way that the dialogue is here is, it's appropriate for the age because it is simple, but it is sparse in a way that is so artful and appreciative of the subtleties of his life. Like, the way that this chapter ends is just this beautiful, restrained, short sentence prose of Percy doing the dishes, of him like watching his mom and Paul sit on the couch and listen to music together. He's just he's briefly describing to you, like, I did my homework. I stayed up a little bit more and I tried. I did some algebra. I wrote an essay. There's something so profound to me about the way that he like wraps this up. And he's like, I like was really shaken and I had this conversation and it energized me. And like, it didn't energize me in the sense that I ran out and did some things, but I like, you know, like my day was better.
Yeah,
I did some things that are important. You know, like that.
No, you're literally like I'm saying, you're hitting the nail on the head. Like, reading the end of this, like the end of this chapter, you know what? I can go get up and do the things. You know what I mean? Like,
You're still moving forward.
Strength to like, and I really love it. And I think there's something else too in like you're saying here, the subtleties of his life, you kind of see how kind of quietly he takes it on his downtime. And I think that does really well to kind of match with like how chaotic the not downtime is, right?
Yeah.
Like when he's doing all these things, I feel like
it
grounds it more. You're like, yeah, like he wouldn't really be chaotic in every point of his life, right? Like, it's like when he gets
100%.
It would be a real breather, which is cool.
I want to shout what you said about like the anxiety. Like, we know like he's worried about a lot of things before. It's not like this is the first time he's been anxious, but this specific kind of anxiety I really felt was like so age appropriate. Like you said, Carter, right before his mom comes out on the bottom of 83 and he says, like, I'd been on so many quests, but like still this felt as risky as anything I'd ever done. Maybe that was because I was so close to graduating and hopefully starting a new life in California. Only a few steps to go, but the ground was starting to crack beneath my feet. I didn't trust that the world could hold my weight much longer. That was such a beautiful image and so, you know, like, it feels like the ground is falling out from underneath you, like in this transitionary period. And like, but also there's something so powerful and like exciting about the world can't hold my weight much longer. Like, I have to move on to something bigger. And I don't even know if this is really the right time to bring this up, but as I was listening to Guts the other day, I was like, wow, Teenage Dream. I don't think we ever talked about this yet, but Teenage Dream is such a Percy Jackson song. The final track on Guts, where
I've heard Olivia
is like meditating on, like,
they all say that it gets better.
It gets better, but what if I don't?
But what if I don't?
I've given you all the best parts of me already. That's just so Percy Jackson at 18 being like, I'm sorry, like, I have to get older, I have to move on.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's going to look like for me, but you have to let me do it.
Right. Oh, man.
Like, please forgive me.
Yeah.
I'm just as scared as you are. Yeah. Right. Ah, okay.
It's okay, so good. It's so good. I feel like you're just, this is good.
This scene is so important. It's giving you, like, good speculative fiction about teenagers needs to tangibly, viscerally interact with the real world that actual teenagers experience. I really feel like that makes a difference between good and great.
Oh, we can't talk about Gen
speculative
V.
fiction.
No.
In order to maximize your slay, to maximize the impact of speculation and to maximize the impact of telling stories about young people, you need both. Like, I want to have a story about somebody who can, like, slay demons, but also, like, I want to know what they look like in their school uniform and, like, when they have to pick up their younger sister from the daycare. You know, like, those are the things
that need to cross over.
That need to cross over. Like, we've always had a level of this with Percy where he's been, you know, like, we'll see him, like, on the Amtrak or, like, walking down the pier of the, like, Embarcadero of San Francisco or something. But, like, I feel like it hits different to have Percy be like, I'm at home. I commuted today.
Right.
You know, like,
it's like there's, like, a pause. Like, the pauses are kind of so big right now, and I'm loving it. So
before we move out of this chapter, I want to shout out one little line, because last week with Ola we were talking about when Percy mentions typing up this story on a word processor, right? And mm-hmm. there's, like, another little meta nod here, which is cute.
Yes,
on 85
huge.
So after this beautiful description of Percy looking into the windows of everybody in New York and all the different quirky people and families and what they're going about, he says, I love New York because you can see all those lives side by side, like an endless patchwork of different video game screens, inviting you to hit play and slip into a new reality. I wondered if anyone had ever thought about slipping into my life.
Like, all the time.
Wink, wink, cute. That's what we're doing right now.
That's good. Wow. I didn't even think of that when I read it.
Wow. It's so, so cute. And I think that it's not just cute. It also, I think, is inviting the reader into that higher level of, like the
what
reverse
are we doing
empathy.
Here?
Yeah. Of being like, not just like I am doing this to Percy, but like maybe somebody is doing this to me. You know, like you, like if you relate to Percy, the reverse thing is true. Like there's someone is looking at you as well. You listener, like, there's a person looking into your window.
Right, right.
Like, looking into your window, I don't mean, like, stalking you. I mean, like,
right.
I mean that your actions have consequences and that you are probably inspiring a person who is younger than you or more confused about something that you have some certainty about.
Also, we're literally doing a podcast right now. Like, you guys are looking into our window.
The windows,
oh, my God.
Weird.
No, that's
weird.
So
observation.
Okay. Wow. Okay, chapter 12.
Ganymede gets me a refill.
Yes. It's like basically a regular school week chapter, which is
so cute. Again,
amazing.
Goes
we go to
the
movies.
We go to Central Park. We get smoothies. When he was like, this is what I did this week. I was like, that's what I did this week too, Percy. I went to the movies. I got a smoothie. I went to Central Park.
Just hearing alone that for the second time now in the series of Percy going to the movies, I'm like, you are more like me than you think, Percy Jackson. You're more like me.
Admit you're me. King.
Yeah, admit it, right? Like, it's the window of my life that he's looking into. It's awesome.
Oh.
I'm just joking. No, it really is the window of Percy's life that we are all trying to slip into.
There's a reference to a quote-unquote short story about a guy who liked to open cans that they're reading in his English class, which definitely, I put the feelers out to you guys. I was like, does that sound like a famous high school English thing?
I missed that.
I didn't read this because I don't like this author, which might be controversial. I feel like Rick probably does really like this person, obviously, because there's a reference. Rick has really been like feeling himself with the intertextuality in this book and being like, I will give you high school English teacher, whether you like it or not.
It's good.
We love it.
Whether you notice or not. The story probably is Big Two-Hearted River by Ernest Hemingway from his first collection of stories in the early 50s.
Big Two-Hearted River? Okay.
That's pretty high school.
As we were describing that last scene, I was like, I still don't like
economy
Hemingway, and I will
language.
Stand by this.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene was giving a good version of what Hemingway thinks he's doing. That economy of language, the iceberg thing.
Hemingway
where,
thinks
like,
he's doing Rick Riordan, but Hemingway could never.
Riordan could definitely do Big Two-Hearted River, but could Hemingway do
The Chalice of the Gods? No, he
couldn't.
The Chalice
of the Gods? I don't think so.
No. I will be so honest. We read no Hemingway in my high school. So that
we
wasn't
barely
high
did.
We barely. Anyway, so Percy's reading. He's having lunch. He's in the cafeteria. And Ganymede shows up. Yes, they have a little chat. That's basically the substance of the chapter. This dynamic is very interesting. Ganymede is like kind of like harassing Percy, but he's also like clearly nervous. And the power dynamic is, I find this really fascinating. I don't know if, did anyone else feel like, oh, like Ganymede is not exactly like talking down to Percy in this sort of unidirectional, I'm going to fuck you up way that a lot of the gods do. Right. He's giving like, like, it's almost verging on, like, peers, or, like, Ganymede is almost, say, it's like older
Ganymede's
cousin.
Ganymede's his GSA.
Yeah. You know?
Yes.
His grad student advisor, his TA.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was something to, now that you say it, there was something to it.
And it's weird because Ganymede's also, like, doing things for him and asking him for a favor. And,
it's
like,
the same way like, Apollo treated Percy. As Lester.
Oh, true. Good
kind form. Of. They're like analogs, yeah. But like, I think the energy is so interesting because, well, like, it's a little bit different because now we're in Percy's perspective and we're seeing Percy like have a new relationship to like a god and sort of be like, oh, you are more powerful than me. You could vaporize me. But like, also, can you?
Also, right. You know, like, is that actually what you're going to do? Like, you seem like you're kind of, I don't know. Yeah, there's something
about
to
the
it.
Shifting dynamic is giving you coming of age, I think, as well.
Do you feel like it was kind of similar? Maybe because, I mean, he was what, like a mortal, right? Who has turned to a god. I feel like it, what
yes,
other.
That's also true that Ganymede mortals. Knows what it's like to be mortal, unlike, say, well, I guess Apollo knows what it's like to be mortal now, but like, you know, like most of the gods.
And even like, maybe like Dionysus still like talks down to Percy in ways, but like for the most part is kind of maybe on just a level like right above.
No, it's different. Yeah,
something. And I'm trying to think of who else we know that Percy's crossed paths with that was mortal turned to god, that like it's kind of similar to Ganymede, but I can't think of anyone in the past books right now.
Dare I say it is time for the epic Percibeth humidifier flashlight FaceTime call.
Oh yes, word. No, another highlight point, and it's like right outside of Percy's bedroom.
Yeah,
his personal. Wow, it's so fascinating. Like, we've literally, like, yeah, to think about the space that, like, the last time we were here was like Nico and the fire escape, you know, like a meaningful memory.
Oh,
like,
oh yeah, oh my god,
wow.
Yeah,
so true.
No, okay,
he's FaceTiming Annabeth, even though, as we have established, they do live in the same city, but like, she's downtown.
Also, they can't have FaceTime because, of course, of the demigods no cell phone thing, which Rick explains out here by having Percy say, like, I never really thought about why. Quote, it's just so on brand for our lives. I've always accepted it.
Yeah.
Do we think that this qualifies as slang that Rick learned from a person on the internet?
It's just so on. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yes, he definitely
I don't think
got
old
that.
People talk like that, right?
I think he gets everything from Becky now. He gets all his life from Becky slash from working with Marco Shiro.
Yes, 100%. I won't get into any other people who I feel like may be influencing at this point now because we'll get into that.
Right.
True,
oh, right. Rick does have more young people in his lives, maybe.
Yes.
Young actors, yeah, we'll say
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, that's real. Totally. Grandpa Rick.
But
yeah,
yes,
the mental image is striking. It's not just so like we've done iris messages before. We've done iris messages in the home before, but now it's specifically the mister.
Can't you figure it? Can't you just like see it right in?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my god, I loved it because it's just so simple. It's so simple and it just works. You know what I'm saying? Which is kind of
begging to be a fan art.
Right. I was literally gonna say totally. That. I was like, "Where's the fan art? Totally. Someone send it to me, please." There's a shout out or callback to Monster Donut, which is the, we just started talking about Phineas and Ferb on the Patreon. So it's the Mr. Slushy Burger of the Ryan Ferb. The idea that there still are like Monster Donuts everywhere, just around.
Yeah.
Also shout out to our friends, Phoebe and Emily, who run the Monster Donut podcast.
Very sweet. No, literally like that's so cool. Like callbacks to that, the like, I don't know, world building or like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, more of it, please, right? Yes. Like, I love that.
We're talking about children of Iris who might be able to help us get in contact with Iris because it's not going to be just as simple as Percy being like, well, I met her one time. And who's the one like kid of Iris that we really know about? The famous, wonderful, lovely Butch.
Butch. Love
the
Butch.
The Pegasi handler, giant biceps, rainbow tattoos.
I really was foolish for thinking he would show up. He doesn't show up.
I'm a little gagged that they were like, I'm not just going to bring this character back. Like, we will have a second child of Iris because I need to serve you
Soho Elegance.
Oh my god, but we have to get there. I'm so excited to talk about this character.
I was shocked too. Wait, before we leave, can we like dive in a little more to like this humidifier scene? Just really, because it's just...
No, we gotta break down before we get to Blanche.
This was another moment where I was reading it and just like the dialogue between them just put it all together in a way that made so much sense. Like little things like they just have a dialogue. They have like a shorthand now, I think, between a lot of the characters. It's just so casual. I don't know. It doesn't have to be so explained out. You already understand it. You can already picture it. Kind of like Peter Parker and Mary Jane in like Spider-Man 2 or something. It's just like their characters are established. You already know their relationship and like how it works. And now they just kind of are like in the vibe of it.
Should we read some of that dialogue, Carter? Do you want to be Annabeth?
Yes. Yeah. I'm ready.
Okay, I'll be Percy just from 92 to 93. You can't be serious.
She's already agreed to meet us at the market.
But aren't most quests supposed to be three people? Wouldn't a fourth be bad luck?
She's not joining our quest. She'll just make the introduction to her mom and hopefully convince Iris to go easy on us when we tell her, well, that we suspect her of being a cup thief.
Or she could make things worse. You remember what happened at the last campfire?
I thought it was kind of funny, actually. Calm down, Seaweed Brain. I got this under control. Don't me. My roommate's coming. Gotta go. Love you.
You too. Don't love your plan, though.
Finish your homework.
Yes, ma'am. That's adorable.
Iconic.
It's perfect. You're like, wow. Like Rick doesn't only know the slang that he hears from the teams around him, but like he also gets the nuance. Like he really does. Like maybe things don't ever change, and it was like this for him at that age. But you're like, wow. Like I don't know. I really love that. I really love that part.
And before we go to the farmer's market, we're gonna take a quick break here.
Okay. Word.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, it's chapter 13. For the record, in chapter 12, I was thinking that there was like another child of Iris that I was completely forgetting about. And I was like, who is this? Like, why don't I know who they're alluding to? It's a new character. It's brand new. Her name is Blanche. I suppose I'll read some of her character description. On page 95, Blanche, daughter of Iris, wore a trench coat the color of night, jeans and tactical boots, all of which matched the makeup that made her eyes sparkle like black diamonds. Her head was shaved, except for a white blonde topknot. Around her neck hung a Nikon camera the size of a shoebox. Wow, she said, looking around. Uptown. Referring to the Upper West Side, because she's famously from Soho.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, I can't believe we literally know somebody who lives in Soho. That's wild.
Yeah, I was missing her. Oh, Sam, who has been a former guest on this podcast.
I thought you were going to say Blanche. Like, know her now. We do know her. We know her.
Yeah.
People in Soho really do look like that. It's true.
Yeah. That's awesome. I loved this. I loved the description. I love the flip on what you got kind of from Butch in a way. Not exactly from Butch, but...
Yes.
No, it's true. It's like another counter...
It's a different subversion. Yeah.
I love it. I love that. I think my favorite characters in the story, which maybe just seem to be ending up to be a lot of the characters, which is awesome, but just kind of do, like you're saying, subvert. They subvert what you would expect, like what you're thinking. Like she could have her own story written from just like what
literally you, yes right?
You're like, you can follow something like that would be so interesting. I love that
she is such a sickening character. Like the fact that this whole like campfire thing that they're alluding to is that she literally used her Iris powers to turn everything black and white.
She
absorbed all of the color and made everything monochrome, and like her whole thing is that she's into like black and white photography of dead things.
Yeah.
Also, her name is Blanche and she likes things being black and white. That's obviously to me a reference to A Streetcar Named Desire, the film.
Film. You got to specify with those Tennessee Williams adaptations, whether it's the film or the play.
Well, also she says like, you made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Yes.
She's just like weird old timey. Also then later Iris is like, we could watch WandaVision. a fun black and white TV show that pays homage to.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the noir Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Like, yes. What? Yeah. The Nick Cage one. I go where it's wind, and where it's rain, it smells like rain.
Yes.
I'm personally shocked a bit because instantly, aren't you like, oh, I love her. Like, she's awesome, right? Don't you think she's cool?
My first reaction was like, I own that outfit. My second reaction was like, is this? I was like a little suspicious. I feel like this character description is a little bit giving. Classic Manic Pixie Dream Girl. But because she's only here for a chapter, it's okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's okay to be one-dimensional if you exist for 10 pages.
Oh, yeah. Also, she's like a Manic Pixie Dream, the Matrix, they, them, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, the shaved head is a little bit giving. I don't care if you fucking like it.
I love that about it.
Also, like, Camp Half-Blood has been missing these, like, weird New York City artsy types. But we know they exist because the camp is in Long Island. Like, there are weird New York City kids who are going to Camp Half-Blood for the summer.
Right. And she's one. And it's just like, I don't know. It's like if Rachel Elizabeth there was like a different route. You know what I'm saying?
If Rachel Elizabeth there was Gen Z instead of being a millennial.
Wow. Good point. And I read this and I get that she like did the thing where she scared Percy, which shocked me too. So I'm like, Percy doesn't get scared from much at all, right? I'm like, oh my God. But she got him, and I'm like, doesn't seem like someone that Percy would love. Doesn't seem like a kid that Percy would be like, oh, I really F with that kid, I'll say. I really F with that kid. You know what I'm saying? Like it just seems like, oh, well, she's like real.
The group dynamic is so interesting because like Percy doesn't like her. Finds her like weird and a little bit scary.
Right?
Grover's like kind of in love with her, but like not actually in love with her. Is like Grover thinks she's sickening.
Grover's like, that's a sickening so artist. Funny. She's making statements.
Like, she has amazing taste. Mm-hmm. And I love that Grover is like gagged.
And I'm going back to the whole queer Grover agenda.
Fair.
Grover came out in the Chalice of the Gods, as far as I'm concerned. The wrist is limp.
Grover is giving, what would you say? Like bisexual hide.
Grover has always been giving that, but it's like more now. It's like urgent.
It's emphasized. It's emphasized for sure. I agree.
I also would pay so much money to see Nico interact with Blanche.
Oh, word. I didn't even think of that. I mean, look, you're coming up with, like, this is why we're here together today, is to share.
This is why we're gathered here today.
Little parts that we're like, wait, don't forget that.
Pitch fanfics.
Yeah, kind of exists.
Yes. Here's my fanfic pitch. Will, for Nico's birthday, Will is like, I'm going to get Blanche to black and white everything.
Oh, work.
Wow.
For like a party?
Really?
For like Blanche does a photo shoot.
No, like the entire, like,
no, literally
Camp
just like the party is
literally
black and
it's
white.
Just black
That's
and white.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So brilliant.
And it's like the 1940s.
Yes.
Well, everyone enacts an old movie, but it's actually black and white. Wow.
And Nico's like, this reminds me of my childhood.
It was just so, I think just, I'm just like giddy like this whenever a new demigod comes in the picture, because it is like that. It's just like, wow, now there's a little corner of the map of the camp that's painted in now in my brain.
Yes, exactly. Little detail.
Yeah, little detail. And it's brilliant. I love it.
Another piece of Persepolis dialogue that really threw me back to the good old days of you drool in your sleep. Annabeth going, relax, you're grinding your teeth. Percy saying, am not. Though I totally was. She took my hand. Annabeth, enjoy the day. Maybe later, I'll let you buy me lunch. Percy, that doesn't make me feel better. Though it totally did.
I loved it.
Relax, you're grinding your teeth is the 18-year-old version of you drool in your sleep.
You drool in your sleep. Yeah.
Wow. That is brilliant. That is brilliant that you're like making the comparison. I didn't think of that then when I was reading that either.
We're at the Lincoln Center Farmers Market, right?
Yes. And we do finally meet Iris.
We do. She's wearing a muumuu.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
This scene is quite interesting.
She's giving Auntie Iris.
Yes.
The description of like her like stand and like all the different like colors coming in from the booth from the different crystals was just like such unique visual of a rainbow that I feel like I wouldn't have expected.
Yeah.
And she and Blanche have an interesting relationship. It is a version of a strange parent, but it's not a version of a strange parent that we've seen before, where she is like a little bit afraid of Blanche and like really wants to like make her happy. And it's like,
wait,
trying
you're
to give
afraid
her all this
of your
gift.
Emo child.
Yeah. Like so many of these relationships are so like weirdly tinged by the power dynamic. Whereas like, of course, all parent-child relationships have the power dynamic. That's always layered onto it. But then we also sometimes also see the thing of the parent being like, in spite of this, I like don't totally understand how to make you happy. So I'm just going to, I don't know, like bend over backwards and buy you all these things.
Right. Do whatever I can to just like try and get something. No, I love that. I did like that she does try and like, I guess in a way, like pull her out of that shell that she kind of had. It seems like Blanche kind of like sits in. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of a little surprised because I would think that her being a literal black sheep of the Iris family, you know what I'm saying? Like demigod family there. I would think that she would kind of, just knowing Iris, be like, I actually love you for this. Like, I love that you're all black. You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of rock this whole like dark.
Black is a color.
Compared to like all the rainbow.
Black is
depending
no colors.
Because it seemed like something that she was like trying to pull her out of that. And I was like, I think if you let her sit in that, it's kind of, I don't know.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, Iris is the goddess of the rainbow and, like, all different kinds of people and all different kinds of colors. So we think she would, like, support her child who's, like, a quirky, you know, I love everybody and their little identities kind of thing. Yeah.
Not to say that every godly parent would, but this one I would expect. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And especially one thing I was like, you know, black, the color black is every other color combined. Like that is a fact about.
Isn't that white?
It depends. It's like opposite for color theory versus like paint theory. Like, or sorry, light theory versus paint. Like light, white is all the colors. Paint, black is all the colors.
Okay. Yes.
And she is an artist.
She is an artist. She's so in a sense, in a way, it's got.
She's like optics. That's the thing. It's like the camera work is like giving you like I it's know about
Iris.
Refraction.
Yeah.
And light.
Oh,
rainbows,
so cool.
But I'm just choosing to like not express that.
Perfect teenage rebellion. Like I'm gonna do all of this, but except for the one thing my mom wants me to do.
Yeah,
like I got my talent from you, but I'm gonna like not do. I'm not gonna do it the way that you do it or the way that you want to do it.
Yeah. But I took like what you're saying about her being like you know like a caring parent, Jake. I feel like that's like the Wanda. Like when she says like maybe we can watch an episode of WandaVision together, that felt like. To me, like her throwing her child a bone.
Yes, I agree. Because obviously, like Blanche is more of like a locked in character. So it's like maybe it's all just in the vein of like trying to get her to open up, right? And be like more like calm to the world around or whatever it is, right? Or some, I don't know. But I really do think that redeemed, that like made me feel like, okay, well, they have things in common, which means that there's like more, you know what I'm saying? There's more to it. There's definitely more to what's on the page than what you get here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, well, how many times has Iris offered for Blanche to come over and watch an episode of WandaVision together? Because she doesn't know anything about black and white art, but she heard that this one popular TV show is occasionally black and white.
Because WandaVision goes into color. So it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a metaphor. Oh, wow.
I feel like also you just never get this. Like, you've never gotten a godly parent and a demigod just like, somewhat meeting on occasion and kind of just like making plans and being like, yo, I can actually just like, I can actually spot him right now for you if you want me to go find him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can you think of another godly parent where like the demigod and their parent is like chill, not only just chill, but like able to just see each other on a regular basis, even like this? Like
the only thing it thought of was Annabeth and Athena.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's true.
It's, I think the characterization is that relationship is more regular, but it has a similar tone where Annabeth would like kind of see her somewhere and be like, oh, okay, I guess we're going to have a chat.
Yeah.
The minor gods, they're so much, you know, they're just around. So like, I think that they get to spend more time with their kids.
It's true. That's good, which is good. Yeah.
And when we talk to Iris, she's a little standoffish maybe, but very patient and not rude or dismissive. Fundamentally, like as we're getting into it, you know, like she's reacting empathetically to the details, nodding along. We get to a place with her where she like, okay, this is partially like this was Blanche's ask, was that she was like, you need to like hear these people out, help them, don't hurt them, and then we'll hang out. But Iris is pulling through. You know, she's like not being mean about it either. We're getting her she's hearing the story and then we're getting her takes.
And her take is she feels bad for Ganymede.
Yeah.
She says, quote, "I do not mess with people. I feel nothing but sympathy for that poor young god. Swept up by Zeus just because he was attractive, used as an eternal party decoration, and having to endure the scowls of Hera and others as Zeus dotes on him? No. So many young men and maidens have been the victims of Zeus and those other good old gods who do whatever they want with impunity. It's terrible." And Percy's like, oh my god. Oh, is she? Oh, she gets it.
She
like,
gets
wow, it. Okay.
Still, she still is rocking in the same way she was the last time I saw her, which is like awesome, right? It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's not too much other than just like the little plot mechanics, I think, for the rest of this last chapter here. But she says, "I know you think we gods can't resist giving demigods little errands, and you're right. You show up on our doorsteps and we suddenly remember a dozen things we'd love to check off of our to-do lists. But it is more than that." Annabeth says, "Knowledge has value. The more valuable, the more it has to be earned." And Ira says, spoken like a true daughter of Athena, "Also, this will give you something to do while I investigate my hunch. So she didn't steal the chalice, but she thinks she might know who did. But while she's figuring out if she does know who did, they have to clean her staff in a special river where they're going to have to fight some monsters."
Yes.
Fight, but non-violently. That's her whole shtick. She's like, you could cruelty-free quest, go to a river, no one knows where it is, that can clean anything, clean my staff, and also do not kill any of the snakes that will try to eat you.
Oh, and also, in 15 days from now, we're throwing a little feast for the Ides of September to honor Minerva. So by then, Zeus is going to need his chalice. So you better make sure that everything is done in 15 days. To which I immediately thought, 15 days is literally double
long,
what we normally get.
Luxuriating.
We're going to keep chilling in this book. We're going to get some more chill moments, and I'm very excited.
I actually thought that was like a little bit less. Like I thought it was going to be more time than that, but I think that it is fun. I think that there definitely will be some chill downtime, hopefully, between now and then. Or like some more moments of pause, maybe like between then and now. Because it kind of has been. He's kind of just been like, you know, I'm all right, we're going to do this tomorrow, I guess. We're going to do that in 2 days. You know what I'm saying? Just when they when they're able to get these things done, they are. It's another real thing about their age, right? Of just being able to fit into what they have going on, which is chaotic and crazy.
There are two little tiny things that I thought were very funny at the end of this chapter. One is that, like, as soon as Iris brings out her staff, because she used to be the herald of the gods, this is her old staff, Percy, like, starts describing it and being like, it's disgusting. And, like, starts asking all these questions and, like, making all these little jokes in his narration. And then all of a sudden, Grover's like, Percy, letting me know I'd spaced out.
Yeah.
Like,
Fleabag. Do you feel that?
Yes. And then Percy's like, sorry, what? Like, it's like thinking
like
every time.
To the camera.
Yes, he's talking to the camera. Every time Percy has been doing like little jokes and like making sassy comments in his narration, he's been completely spacing out, catatonic in whatever scene he's in.
Just so real to the ADHD dyslexia of it.
Yes.
All. It's just so good. I've lived it. I've lived that moment. I know what it's like to be like just thinking that your brain just running in a direction after you're getting the info, which I love.
And then everyone's like, "What? Where are you? mentally, where are you?" The other thing is that the staff is partially made out of Dodonan oak, to which Percy is like, "I don't know what that is," because this book takes place before the Trials of Apollo.
I did not register that either until you just pronounced it, and I was like, "Oh my god, I know her."
Another reason I was able to read this is because I am still reading Trials of Apollo. So that I will hold on to. I will hold on. Don't spoil anything there, but that is interesting.
I won't spoil anything, but I will say that possibly my favorite character in the entire Ridenverse is himself, Dodonan.
Dodonan. Okay. Word. All right. Yes. I'll have to see and meet when the time comes. When I literally was reading Trials of Apollo and then this book, and then like it came out and I was like, okay, I need to read this. Like I need to read this, especially so
this
I can be on the pod. But like I'm like jumping back into it, one that I can match up with on the pod. So I'm like, this is great. But this seriously, like no regrets because it does take place before. And I'm like, yes,
yeah,
this is perfect.
Good timing.
It's perfect. It is perfect timing. It's great.
Good timing.
Yeah.
So this section wraps up with Iris doling out her little mini quest. And in order to find this river, we're actually going to have to ask a head Nereid. So Percy's going to wait until Monday when he gets back to school to talk to Eudora, the sea nymph that his dad sent. So we have like a whole weekend just to chill. And that's where we're going to end today.
I wanted to say one more thing about the crystals and like the kind of like look of the whole space. And maybe this is like part of what I'm realizing now kind of gave me the idea of it, but doesn't it kind of make you think of like Howl's Room and like Howl's Moving Castle, like the kind of
colors,
the like kind of, and then she's
the, like, kinda, chimes and the drums and the
calm, like older woman. She kind of reminds you of like a character in like the Ghibli, or I don't know, like there's kind of like definitely characters that remind me of Iris in some of the Ghibli movies here. So just kind of, that is something that kind of encapsulated my brain after, now thinking about it now. I didn't think about that until just now, but really looking back is, I don't know. If he draws inspiration or something, but it's good.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Jake, we have a last question to ask you, which is, since the last time you were here, I don't know if you have the same answer, different answer. Do you think Persepeth is the greatest love story ever told?
Yes. It's only grown strong. Literally, the evidence has only grown stronger. It's only, the writing is getting only more sharp to their relationship. Just having two characters who've gone through so much together, like all of this, and still being able to like look at their relationship and be like, there's a lot to it that feels so genuine, I think is really awesome. It's good to like have characters like that. You're like, yes, okay.
Yeah.
The characters I like are genuinely making it out all right, which is good. I like that. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yes. Greatest ever. Yes. 100%.
Oh, thank you, Jake, for joining us. We'll have to have you back. You're clearly moving pretty slowly. So we've got some more time.
If you need another papa, I'm going to keep going reading this book. So another time. I'm so excited. This is like awesome. So
all right. The next time you all hear from us, we will be back to talk about some more chapters, and we will have a brand new guest who is an actual legitimate bona fide member of Gen Z. So maybe they'll have some insights to offer. All right. We'll see you all next time.
Awesome.
Bye all.
Bye, everyone.